All right, this is The Defender once again, and I am your host, Mike Fulbright, and we are continuing on in the investigation of the murder of Max Cahill. And in the last podcast we had, we got the evidence that was presented that was done by the police department there in Atlanta. And we've also interviewed one particular suspect. His name was Greg Grimes. And we also heard the interview or the from the statement of, and let's see, and her name is Miranda Hart Grimes. So we heard from them too. Now we're going to corroborate Greg Grimes' statement and for his alibi. And we're going to be talking to Eddie Espinosa. All right, so let's listen to this. Now, before we get started, of course, Max Stone has, you know, he's investigating the crime itself because it's been unsolved. And he's already talked to the police department there and asked, you know, who's involved and what was happening. And he's already gotten the information that he needs to investigate the case. Of course, he's helping the police department up there, as they do. Let's go ahead and get into the interviews. This is a Northrop Police Department witness statement form, and like I said, Eddie Espinosa. All right. He said, "Me and Greg go way back. Been best buds since high school. Sure, he's got a temper. But don't most guys when they get a good reason, or when they got a good reason. Greg was hanging with me the night of the murder, from around 7 to maybe 10:30. We had some beers and talked. He was still pretty riled up from the new dessert menu over at the Ches Lorraine. It's got his wife, her mom, and this Max character all having a great time together, and it doesn't look good. Now, he went over to the school and threatened Max that morning, but he didn't mean nothing by it. He always says crazy stuff like that when he's mad. Now, don't think she was cheating, because Greg keeps her in line real good. But I think that creep Max was trying to move in on Greg's territory. Greg couldn't get that dessert menu off his mind, so I figured we had to do something to help him blow off some steam. So we took a couple of plastic bags to the park and gathered up some real nasty dog stuff and headed off to Max's house. There wasn't anybody home, so we snuck around back and dumped it in his barbecue grill. Just a harmless prank, but a good one nonetheless. I'm not really proud that we did that, but I'm sure you can inspect his grill and confirm my friend Greg had nothing to do with the murder. He was with me the entire time, and that grill can prove it. And we went back to my place, had a couple more beers, and then we went home. Or then he went home. Greg might pull a dirty deed or two now and then on someone who deserves it, but he isn't someone who'd go and murder anybody. He's a real upstanding guy. Now, that guy didn't deserve to be killed, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm not all that sorry about what we did to his grill. He had it coming, and Greg finally stopped talking about this, about macaroons. So we see his statement corroborates what Greg was saying, and he's one of the alibi witnesses, you might say. So we've got that in place. And also, we're going to be looking at Diane Hart. Let's look at that. This is her narrative, all right? And she says, "I cannot even begin to express the devastation I feel over the loss of such a wonderful young man. I was Dean Cahill's personal secretary from the past 2 months. Prior to that, I've been the personal secretary to the past three deans of the history department here at Tubman, Personally, I've known Max for several years, as he used to be engaged to my daughter, Miranda, before he decided to take a professorship at Yale. Miranda stopped in to visit me 2 or 3 times a week for lunch and continued to do so once Max became the dean. Max and Miranda quickly became reacquainted, and the three of us would frequently have lunch together. He'd even recently brought us out to lunch at Chez Lorraine for my birthday, and they took a picture of the three of us and used it on their new dessert menu. Chez Lorraine is one of my son-in-law's favorite restaurants. He even proposed to Miranda there. So, as you can imagine, Greg was out of his mind with jealousy when he saw that new dessert menu. Max and Miranda were just friends, nothing else. But try telling Greg that. He told Miranda that she was never to see him again, but Miranda had just about had it with all of Greg's anger, jealousy, and constant need to control her every move. So she ignored him. Yesterday morning, I was having trouble getting my car started, and when I finally got to the office, I saw Greg bursting out of Max's office in a rage, screaming, "You'd better stay away from her or else." I asked him what was wrong, and he said, "You know exactly what's wrong, and you don't do a single thing to stop it." Then he purposefully shoved past me and left. Greg's got a terrible temper. He left, and then Greg has a terrible temper, and given everything that's just happened, I really don't know what to think. There was also a couple of times in the past week when Max's old college roommate showed up. Max said his name was Alex Jamerson. The first time, he was clearly drunk. I tried to tell him Max wasn't in, but he didn't buy it and started yelling his name toward his office doors. When Max came out to see what was going on, the drunk man got right in his face and said something like, "Hey, buddy, remember me? The guy you threw under the bus? Doing pretty well for yourself, huh? You better watch it, because I learned a thing or two in the slammer about how to deal with a snitch." Then, just like that, he turned and staggered out of the building. Now, he showed up again yesterday when I was in Max's office going over some paperwork. This time he seemed sober and asked Max for money, saying it was the least he could do since Max was living the high life and he was living in a homeless shelter. Max declined, and things escalated quickly. He stormed over to the liquor cabinet and smashed several bottles onto the floor. Max quickly got in front of me and told him to get out of his office now, or he was calling the campus police. He glared at Max and said, "Always a snitch, aren't you? You're going to pay for what you've done to me," and then he left. Everybody loved Max. He didn't have any other enemies. I think Professor Hodges was pretty peeved about not becoming the next dean, but seemed to be coming around. It's impossible to stay mad at a charming guy like Max for too long. I tried to convince Max to go to the banquet last night. I told him he needed a break, even if it was just for one night, but he insisted that he needed to superglue his nose to the grindstone because the deadline for a project he'd been working on had been moved up a couple of weeks. I will always regret that I didn't try harder to get him to go. All right, now that statement there is from Diane Hart. That is Miranda's mom. All right, so we've got those two witness statements about old Greg there. One corroborates and one, you know, kind of shows that old Greg got a temper. I see that. And, of course, now Max Stone has got to, he's narrowing things down. And looks like there's one other person that don't like too much of old Max Stone, and that's Alex. Alex Jamerson. Don't like him too much because of what he did to him. Don't know what he snitched about, but Alex Jamerson spent some time in the old slammer. So there seems to be a little bit of a problem there. So he's a good suspect in this crime. So we got two good suspects. We got old Greg Grimes and we got Alex Jamerson. Okay, that's two good suspects right now that Max Stone is having to look at. And he'll be, of course, interviewing them more later. And he's got to interview or go over the interview with Alex Jamerson. You're going to call him back in and go back over his interview, the statements there he made. And, of course, I'm sure Alex has got some alibi witnesses for him as well. So we're moving right along with the investigation. It's a slow process. But old Max Stone is going to get him. Going to get his man, you might say. All right, so let's take a look now at the next interview, which I just said a while ago is going to be Alex Jamerson. So we're going to take a look at him and see what old Jamerson's got to say. And he's a pretty rough-looking character. But let's see what he's got to say here on his personal interest, what the Northrop Police Department wrote down. All right, or actually what Jamerson wrote down. All right, so Jamerson says, during the time of the murder, I was just getting comfy at my five-star luxury accommodations at the James P. Laramie Homeless Shelter. All right, several others, something residents were aware of my presence, and I bet if you slip each one of them a cool, crisp 50, they still won't give you a straight answer about it. But you might want to talk to the shelter director, and gives his name, Mr. Jones, or Miss Jones, excuse me. She was there when I checked in around 7 p.m., and you probably won't even have to bribe her for information. You never know, though. And that's kind of his scribble. That's why I had some hard time reading some of that. All right, so let's take a look at the interview that was conducted. And interview was done by Detective Carl Gaynor, Northrop Police. All right, so let's take a look and see what the old Alexander Bartholomew Jamerson has to say. All right, so he says, first of all, in the interview, detective says, please state your full name for the record. So Alex Jamerson says, it's Alexander Bartholomew Jamerson. Detective, how did you know Mr. Cahill? Jamerson, we were college roommates before that little snitch decided to ruin my life. Detective, excuse me? Jamerson, back in college I smoked some weed and kept it stashed under my bed. Max ratted me out, so they kicked me to the curb, which was just what he wanted. Detective, now why do you say that? Jamerson, Max and I received a lot of attention because we were the two boy wonders of Northrop. The two local boys who were both college freshmen at the ripe age of 15. My intellect was far superior. Anyway, he wanted the attention all to himself, so he set his sights on procuring me a one-way ticket to Dante's Inferno. Detectives, sounds like you bought and paid for that ticket all by yourself there, Alex. Jamerson, everything would have been fine if he'd kept his nose in his books and out of my business. Detective, so you're still harboring resentment for all of this, I take it. Jamerson, kudos for figuring that out. Who wouldn't hold a grudge? I ended up a homeless drunk while he lives the high life. And because he wouldn't keep his mouth shut, I should have shut it for him a long time ago. Detective, shut it for him how? Jamerson, don't even go there. I wasn't suggesting that I do him in. Detective, I see you've accomplished a lot with that superior intellect of yours. 3 arrests for DUI, 1 for assault, 1 battery, 2 for breaking and entering, 1 for domestic abuse with a restraining order, and another 1 for selling drugs. Jameson. And I've got Max to thank for all of that. Detective, taking responsibility for your own actions ever occur to you? Jameson. Hey, he pushed me off the cliff. Gravity did the rest. Detective. Uh-huh. I see here that you visited Max a couple of times recently at his office. About a week ago, you barged in, clearly drunk, and said, I'm going to read this off the statement. Hey, old buddy, remember me? The one you threw under the bus? Doing pretty well for yourself, huh? You better watch it, because I learned a thing or two in the slammer about how to deal with the snitch. Does that sound familiar? Jameson, I don't remember. Detective, and on your second visit, the day Max was murdered, it sounded like you were actually quite well-mannered at first. At least until you asked for money, and he wouldn't give you any. I understand you smashed up a bunch of his expensive liquor bottles and then said something like, you're going to pay for what you've done. Suppose you don't remember any of that either. Nope, none of it. Detective, let's try your memory again, shall we? I hear, third time's always a charm. Alex, where were you between 8 and 8:30 Thursday night? Jameson, now that I remember. I was over at this ultra-posh establishment over on 4th Street. Perhaps you've heard of it. The James P. Laramie Homeless Shelter. I call it Jimmy's Peas. Detective, did anyone see you there around that time? Jameson, well, let's see. Yes, several other drunk homeless guys who'd never admit to seeing me there because the last thing they want to do is talk to the cops. But you could probably talk with Rashia over there. She's the only person in that whole place you can actually trust. Detective, okay, so you've harbored resentment against Max for ages. You blame him for basically all of your problems. You recently showed up out of the blue twice at his office and made threats, along with having a violent outburst. You've got no real alibi for the time of the murder, and then, lo and behold, he ends up dead. You're a smart guy, Alex. How would you say this makes you look? Jameson, I'm done with this conversation. Detective, I'll have one of my men drive you back to the shelter and alert the staff to keep a close eye on you. Don't even think about leaving town. You understand? Jameson, sure thing, Sherlock. Detective, you're a person of interest in an active murder investigation, and if I find out you even walk past the bus depot, I'll have someone bring you in. Am I making myself clear? Jameson, crystal. Detective, I'm done with this conversation as well. Get out of here. So, we see a little attitude problem there with Mr. Jameson, and of course, most of the ones have attitude problems as well. So we got him. All right, now he's a person of interest. As you can see, he's a pretty heavy-duty suspect right now. So got that going on for him, right? So next podcast, as we continue on our investigation, we'll look at his alibi, maybe, and we got a few other persons of interest and suspects that we need to continue with our investigation on and interviews. So until then, this is The Defender. I'm Mike Fulbright, your host, and we are in the home of the free because of the brave. So, hey, also, I keep forgetting this, tell others about the podcast, and that'll sure help. Okay, put them out there, let them know that we got it going on. And if they like it, you know, listen in. All you old timers out there, thanks for rejoining us. And all you new people, hey, thanks for coming in. And I hope you're enjoying what you're listening to. I enjoy making the podcast. There's nothing to sell. I ain't selling nothing, so you ain't got to worry about that. This is just something to do, to have a good time. Enjoy trying to investigate. And you, you super investigators out there, y'all listen to the evidence, okay? Because y'all may come up with a different conclusion, and we'll see. So get your old investigative thinking cap on there, and let's help old Max Stone solve this unsolved case. All right. Hey, once again, this is another ending, same ending. So I'm Mike Fulbright, your host of The Defender. And until we meet next time, everybody be careful out there. And as always, God bless.